Genesis House, FirstNet, built with AT&T, and the Friends in Recovery podcast are proud to bring you Answering the Call, the First Responders podcast. Join your hosts,
Podfather, Jersey Ed,
and Noontime with Skylar New,
as they address the real issues of first responders' health and wellness, from physical and mental health to relationships and work-life balance. Answering the Call, the First Responders podcast, is available on Facebook, Podbean, iTunes, and YouTube, as well as iHeartRadio, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Now, here are your friends in recovery answering the call.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Answering the Call, the First Responders podcast, sponsored by FirstNet, built by AT&T. Are we lucky to have them or what? I'm the podfather, Mike Miles, here with my good friend, Jersey Ed, in Jersey.
In my library, guys. Look at my library.
Oh, you're such a...
accumulating
store of fine books.
Right. I was just pulling a book out before reading one before we got on air.
Yeah, I see it over there. Archie and Veronica. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny, real quick, Mike, when Podfather, when we were in the studio, when we were in Sweet Studio, I literally, that was about a year ago when we first started this show, maybe almost 2 years ago. Yeah. And I wasn't much of a reader. And I'm not a huge, I mean, I love reading. I read every day now, but I'm a very slow reader, right? It's okay. It is what it is. But I got this book and got for first responders, this book is an amazing book. It's not a first responders book, but it's called As a Man Thinketh. Okay. Right. It's just an amazing book. It was probably about this thick. If you guys are watching, it was about this thick. And it took me like 2 weeks to read it. There must have been like, you know, 100 pages, if that, and Sweets is busting my chops. What are you doing? How long taking it? Because remember, I would show up month after month with this book. He's like, "What are you doing reading that book?" So this is my library now. Right. And anyway,
you're an avid reader, as my sister would say.
I am absolutely. I'm reading actually a book called Now Living the Gita, and it's an amazing book about all the branches of yoga and meditation. It's really, really good. So that's a good read. If anybody's looking for a good book, so
I'm reading a great book right now called Spearhead, written by a, last name is Makos, and M-A-K-O-S, young author, incredible writer. And Spearhead is the 3rd Armored Tank Division Spearhead Unit.
Okay.
Under the 3rd Army, George Patton and General Rose. And my dad was in the Spearhead tank.
Really?
Tank commander. Oh, yeah.
And my dad was in a tank, in the Army, in the tank command. Yeah, my dad was.
So there you go. So maybe he was in the Spearhead.
Maybe.
But, and I'm reading another book called The Harbinger, which is incredible. Another incredible book. And it's, I can't even describe it, how good it is. But Google it. I'll tell you, there's three series out. There's only two out so far, but I'm on the second Harbinger book. It's incredible. It's
cool. Cool. And guys, if you want to tell us about some of the books you're reading, maybe some of the good first responders book or police books or whatever, send us an email at help@friendsandrecoverypodcast.com. That's help@friendsandrecoverypodcast.com, or give us a call. 617-379-1163 and leave us a message there. That is not a helpline. I'll give the helpline out in a little bit, but that is just to get a hold of us. Just leave a message. And, if you want to be a guest, as our guest today is, Tommy, and, give us a call. I think he called the helpline and wanted to come on the show. Is that how that happened?
That's how we got
you. That's right. You want to tell us? Tell us a little bit about our guest, Podfather.
Sure, I certainly will. Good friend of mine, Tom Kennedy. He's a retired Lowell police captain. Probably one of the finer cops I've ever met. I worked with Tommy when we were both patrolmen for a short while. We had a lot of laughs. Thing is, when you're working with somebody, you really don't, you first meet, you don't know if you're going to jive or not. But usually, if you didn't get along with somebody, you just rode around. It was ho-hum. You might talk a little bit, but when I worked with him, it was nothing but laughter and, gaiety. It was just a great time. So we became pretty good friends over the years. Tommy just retired the last couple of weeks, and he's also an attorney, father of 2 children, and I don't know, he's enjoying his retirement, I think.
Mm.
seems to be.
So far, so good.
So far, so good.
Attorney, police officer, good Lord. I mean, where do you have time to have two kids?
it wasn't easy, but we managed.
That's right.
Tommy, welcome to the show. It's great to have you. I heard a lot about you throughout the years knowing Mike, and it's a pleasure to have you on.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, and notwithstanding between the laughs and gaiety, Dr. Miles and I did manage to do some police work periodically. Yeah.
Protecting law.
We had a lot of fun while doing it. There's nothing against having fun while you work. Mike and I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, and I just think we're in a time right now, and Tom and I talk probably daily. But we're in a time right now in this country where policing is just gone in a direction.
Oof, yeah.
Such a quick and just, breakneck speed. It's gone in such a direction that I think there's a lot of unnecessary negativity towards police officers. And notwithstanding some of the things that have happened, isolated incidents that the media can really pump up and they can really direct one incident into cities getting burnt down. But yeah. I think it's important to know that, being a police officer, not only is it a rewarding job, because you really, but it's a job you really have to want. It's not just a job, you're looking in the paper and you say unemployment or want ads or, employment ads and go, oh, geez, it's an opening as a cop, I'll be a cop. Well, there's a lot that goes with it. 6 months of an academy, you have to have somewhat of a lived some type of a clean lifestyle. You can't have a bunch of felonies. And people want cops to be protecting their well-being, making sure that they're gonna live, but also watch their houses when they go on vacation and maybe talk to their kids. Being a cop's just not arresting people. There's so much more to being a cop. That's just one small segment. And I just think it. Well, you just retired. Tell me, Tom, in 27 years, I mean, you've been very, very successful becoming a captain, which is not easy. In 27 years, though, what would you say, what's the biggest change you've seen in the last, say, 3 years?
I think probably the biggest change that I've seen is the media portrayal of police officers. And as a police officer, would go out in public and have, through the course of, an 8-hour tour or a week, you can pick whatever time frame you want and, have interactions with a variety of different groups of people, which we always do. I mean, we deal with everything from, accountants to zookeepers, sometimes on a daily basis. So it's not uncommon, at 6 o'clock, you're dealing with one of the wealthiest people in the city. And at 6:30, you're dealing with somebody that's homeless that literally doesn't have a dime in their pocket. Mm. And, we have to treat everybody accordingly, treat everybody with respect and everything else as it should be. But the biggest thing that I've seen over the past few years is the media portrayal. And it's not what the media portrays us to be and what the media portrays the public sentiment to be. Isn't necessarily the case, because if you were to turn on any of the major networks aside from Fox, the coverage is very anti-police, and that's some of the sentiment, but that's the narrative that a lot of networks and a lot of people have been supporting for the past few years, and they don't publicize the good deeds and the good acts that police officers do day in and day out. They only publicize the unfortunate ones. And people have to recognize the fact that when we hire police officers, we hire them. We don't hire them from another planet. We don't build them in the laboratory. We hire them from the human race. And humans are not perfect. They're not police officers, and we make mistakes. We make a variety of them. And unfortunately, some of the mistakes that we make are magnified to a very large extent. And what's interesting, if you look at the statistics, the number of people that die in the hands of the police as compared to the number of people that die as a result of medical malpractice, deaths as a result of medical malpractice are, I think last time I checked, 5 or 6 times higher than in custody deaths, So yeah. Statistically speaking, you're better off with some cop that hasn't, you know, slept in 2 days in an alley at 3 a.m. than you are with your primary care physician at 12. Statistically speaking. But you know, those numbers are really never accounted for. That's not the portrayal. You know, obviously with the, you know, the Minneapolis situation,
yeah,
and so forth, it gets played and played and played and replayed, and to the point where it's beaten into people's heads that this is what the average police officer in the street is doing, and it clearly is not.
So,
and if you look at the statistics, and even if you go out and you take a look at what the men and women in law enforcement are doing, it's not what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They're out there every day. They are protecting and serving the public as they're sworn to do,
yeah.
And that's what the overwhelming majority of officers do day in and day out. But those aren't newsworthy.
Nope.
You know, if you remember the show Cops, you know, had a 20 some odd year run. It didn't, you know, portray, you know, officers in schools or officers doing kind deeds. It was the action of the job and so forth. And as Mike said, that's a very small portion of it. That's a very small aspect of what we do. It probably makes up in your entire career, makes up maybe 10% of it, maybe if you're lucky. And that would be in a busier urban department. If you're in a smaller community bedroom type of setting, it would be far less.
Yeah. You know, Mike,
well, you know, I was on that show Cops back in the 90s, and you know, we rode around. I had Bob Good, who was the producer, he was the cameraman, and I had the sound guy, his name was Ken. He's from Maine. Great guy. I can't think of his last name right now. But basically, they were bored out of their minds. They said, you know what? Mm. Not just with Lowell, but they just came from Rhode Island, where there had been a shooting. They shot a guy on the railroad tracks, and they were debating whether they were going to air it or not. But they said basically what they were learning. Now, both of these guys have moved on. Bob Good became a producer for a show called another show where they didn't follow police, but it was the incredible race so but basically he said what he was finding about policing, which he was totally surprised, both of them, was what a mundane, boring job this can be. There's not a lot of excitement, there's not a lot of hot calls, you know, and basically, you know, that's what you're up against, you know. And detectives, I have a friend who's a detective in New York City, and he's a Lowell guy, and he had used me as a reference to get the job, and he got the job. He's a sergeant detective now. He's been out there 13 years. And he said, recently, they've been taking detectives and putting them in uniform. In other words, they're taking them, putting them out in the street because they have that knowledge. They know how to deal with the public. There's a lot of these young kids come out of the academy. They're petrified. They're getting water dumped on them. They're getting pelted with bottles and rocks. And I mean, you know, that's just not the way. Who would take that job? Just think of it. You're going to get a job, and you're going to be walking down the street, and someone's going to throw a baby jar full of cement at your head.
Yeah.
You know, from a third story building. And that's what's going on. You know, it's insane.
Well, think about it, guys. If you guys were younger and you were starting your careers off, would you think, and it was today, today, would you guys become a cop today? Seriously?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah,
absolutely. No way. Now, I was in the military for 3 years. I joined with one of my closest friends, Kevin Richardson, and Kevin, very accomplished police officer, became a chief, very level-headed, very smart, personable, brave. I mean, he's got all the qualities. We were in the Army together. We were both MPs, military police. And that's kind of how this morphed into me becoming a cop. But if I was just getting out of the Army today, even as an MP, and with the climate of law enforcement, the way things are going now, absolutely not.
Yes.
No, yeah. I think I would have gone to a school maybe to be a psychiatrist or a psychologist to begin a career helping people, definitely. But I definitely wouldn't have become a cop.
I mean, back in the day, I assume it was the same with Mike. Mike's a little bit older, but when I was in my late teens, everybody took the police test, everybody took the fire test. If nothing else, if you make it, you make it. If you don't, you don't.
Yeah.
There are very, very few people that are taking the examinations now. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I remember being at going to a prep course in Boston in the late 80s, and the guys told you, listen, don't put Boston as one of your choices. There are thousands and thousands of kids taking this exam in Boston. You will never become a Boston police officer unless you are a Boston resident. About 5-7 years ago, maybe, Boston is hiring people outside the city. Mm-hmm. That's how desperate they become.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and, yeah. You know, we have ourselves in the Lowell Police Department, we have spots that we can't fill. We just can't find qualified applicants. Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, you're going to go through all the academy, work nights, have cement thrown at you and everything else, as opposed to going to work at, say, IBM for 4 days yeah. a week for better money.
And better money, yeah.
For a lot guys, better
money. And also think what you guys just said, that both you guys have said you wouldn't be a cop today if you just were starting out. Think of the two officers that everything you guys did in your career. I know Mike, you know, the community, he was all about community. I'm sure that rubbed off on you too, Tommy. You know, I'm sure you did a lot for the community that we don't hear about on the news. But we would not have two great police officers with a great career if you guys are starting off today. Think about all the police officers we're losing because of this right now. The people who do want to do this, but I'm not, you know, they don't want to be subjected to this crap out there, you know?
No, it's unfortunate too, because you have people that, you know, allegedly community leaders, and, you know, they play different roles in the community, both elected and appointed. And some of them are very prominent. They're taking the position that, well, you know, police officers shouldn't be out there looking for shoplifters. They shouldn't be stopping people in traffic. All they should be doing is looking at the murders and investigating rapes and things like that. Community policing was born the exact to that. We've already experienced that, and that was quote unquote the professional police model that when Mike came on the job. Just the facts, man, the dragnet, type of stuff, yeah. which was all fine and good. Unfortunately, as we progressed on into the 80s and the 90s, government found that approach to law enforcement wasn't working. And we went back to the old model of the community policing, you know, being in the community as opposed to showing up at the same house 3 times a week and just taking the guy that's causing the problem out of there. We look deeper. We look to the root of the problem and maybe try to get other agencies involved if there's an issue with the house, inspectional services. And that was, you know, that was one of the ways that we addressed the rampant drug problem we had back in the city, back in the 80s and the 90s. We got away from just the facts, ma'am, and to see people that elected officials and appointed officials supporting and advocating to basically turn the clock back. And a lot of them don't realize it because they're younger. They didn't see what happened back in the 80s and the 90s. And Mike will tell you, he was working on the job at the time. I was not. It was a great time to be a kid because there were no policemen around. Downtown Lowell was very similar to the Wild West. I mean,
yeah.
it was something else, but it's not that model is not something that we should be looking to return to, because the, you know, a lot of places, particularly the urban areas, have done very, very well with the community policing model. Yeah. Mayor Giuliani,
yep. New
York City, when he was first elected, one of the first things he did was to get rid of the squeegee men and things like that. And people said, well, you know, they're not bothering anybody. Yeah, they are bothering people. They're essentially robbing them. They're just spitting on the window and getting away with it. He recognized that. And, you know, if you go through, well, I'm not sure what it looks like now, but if you went through Times Square post Giuliani as opposed to pre Giuliani, very, very different place as of community policing.
Sure.
It did not involve the police. And obviously we investigate murders and serious crimes and so forth, but we also investigate the you know, the shoplifters. When a shopkeeper calls you, hey, I have the shoplifter, what are we supposed to do? Tell them there's nothing we can do. That's totally contrary to the fundamentals of community policing.
Of course.
That's not what we do. And that model potentially works out on the highway when you're handing out tickets to people. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work in a municipal setting. It certainly doesn't work in an urban setting.
Yeah, agreed. Podfather?
You know, yeah, I was just going to say, you know, it's when I look at the liberal attorney generals and you know, district attorneys, women, both of them in Massachusetts, you know, and I listen to them, and they don't understand. I mean, they have education and they want to they want to soothe all these problems, but without having some knowledge of how things were. I mean, history is a great teacher. Mm-hmm. And history will show us which way to go if we just took the time and looked at it, you know? I mean, but nobody wants to do that. Mm-hmm. They think their ideas, their woke ideas are the way to go now. And it's not. You know, we have a district attorney in Suffolk County, who is just horrific. I mean, as far as before she was elected, she was already talking about no more arrests for people breaking into houses, no more arrests for people shoplifting. Now think of this. You're a person who doesn't work. You're a common criminal. And all of a sudden you're reading this in the paper. Hey, I can go shoplift at CVS, take what I want.
Yeah, exactly.
These people got elected and they get put in these positions. And am I right? I mean, this is the way things are going. Yeah. And you'd be chastised if you arrested somebody for committing a crime like that. Who wants to open a store where anybody can walk in and take what they want?
Yeah.
Eventually, that's going to lead to someone picking up the cash register and walking out with it, you know?
Killing somebody on top. Well, if you think about it, we're going to take a quick break here, Padraig. We'll continue this conversation when we get back. You want to take us out to the break?
Well, I'll be right back. This is, Answering the Call, First Responders Podcast, sponsored by FirstNet, built by AT&T. We'll be right back.
You're first. First to respond. First to put others' lives before your own. And in an emergency, you need a network that puts you first, that connects you to technology, to each other, and to other agencies. Built with and for first responders. FirstNet, the only congressionally authorized wireless network for first responders. Because putting you first is our job.
Since 1992, Genesis House has been helping real people heal from addiction on their private recovery campus in beautiful Palm Beach County, Florida. Their family-owned program is accredited by the Joint Commission and offers detox and dual diagnosis treatment in a comfortable and confidential setting. At Genesis House, they focus on treating the underlying causes of addiction. Their comprehensive approach includes psychiatric care, individual and small group therapy, trauma healing techniques, and holistic care including yoga, massage, and animal-assisted therapy. After treatment, their clients enjoy the lifelong support of a nationwide network of Genesis House alumni. Call Genesis House today at 1-800-737-0933 to speak with someone who understands. Visit them on the web at www.genesishouse.net. It's time to start your journey to a long and successful recovery.
Hey everybody, welcome back. Answering the Call, the First Responders Podcast, sponsored by FirstNet, built by AT&T. I am the Podfather, Mike Miles, and I'm here with Jersey Ed and Captain Retired Tom Kennedy.
Thank What's you. Up, guys? Well, real quick, guys, before we bring Tom back in, Tom, you're a wealth of knowledge, man. I keep this podcast going for like two days to everything that you're talking about here. Real quick, there are some downfalls of the job, and we want to make sure that you guys are feeling okay, and we want to make sure the cops are doing good. So there's a thing called copline.org. If you're feeling suicidal, whatever it is, if you're not feeling well, if you're drinking too much, contact copline.org. And there's an 800 number, 800 copline. That's 1-800-267-5463. It's always in our show notes. But you contact them. They have trained retired police officers answering the phones to make sure that you guys are doing okay. Any stuff, anything that you have as far as, mental health or substance abuse or whatever it is, 1-800-COPLINE, they're there for you guys. And
there's 100 police officers, police officers answering the phone. They're to help you. If you're suicide ideation, any type of anxiety, having a bad day, you know, don't be, and it's all confidential. And, Stephanie Samuels put this together. We had her on as a guest. It's a great organization.
Yeah, absolutely. So check that out, 1-800-COPLINE or copline.org. The other thing, guys, Mike, and I know this pertains to some of the listeners, but we just started at Friends in Recovery Communities. We started a 12-step meeting for first responders only, Thursday night at 8 p.m. Eastern time. And if you go to genesishouse.net, that's genesishouse.net, and right. go to the connect section, and under, I think under, it says online or whatever. If you look through, if you search through it, you'll find all our meetings. And that meeting will be in there, excuse me, the Zoom code, everything is in there as far as all that goes. So
it's considered a badge meeting for people.
Yep.
First responders, police, fire, EMS, corrections.
Yep.
Michael M is going to be the facilitator.
Yep.
I think Thursday nights he's facilitating that. Yep. Is that correct?
Thursday nights at 8 p.m.
He's been on the show. He's a friend of ours. And feel comfortable. Yep.
Absolutely. So check that out. And any questions, give us a call, 617-379-1163. Back to Tommy. Tommy, thanks for being a guest on the show. Thank you for all the great information. And thank you for your service all those years that you've been protecting us and keeping Lowell safe. That's definitely near and dear to what we do here on Answering the Call. So we really appreciate what you've done.
Thank you for the recognition, sir.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we were talking about community policing and all that. And you know what, Tommy, something came into my head as you're speaking. So, you're told not to go on to, somebody robbing a store. Podfather, you said the same thing. Somebody hits up at the CVS. What's the next thing? You know, they could walk into this, into the, take whatever they want. And then you got vigilantes out there or shopkeepers trying to protect themselves. You get into a shootout, a shopkeeper gets shot and killed by the person who's trying to, rob them. And when all because of, we're not going to go on those kind of calls. You guys deal with murder. So my thinking is, so that shopkeepers are getting murdered and then you guys get to come and do your job. It just doesn't make sense,
Not to sound, corny, but it's the broken windows theory. So in other words, there's a broken window. We just walk by it. The next day there's graffiti. We walk by it. The next day there are people living in the building. And we just, over the course of time, that broken window becomes a much bigger problem.
Yeah.
Whereas if we address the broken window right from the start of the time it was broken, none of those subsequent events would take place. And that's the whole idea. And that's what a lot of people in government, again, both elected and appointed, are missing. And to go back to the old ways and the old models, and as I said, Mike remembers the condition of the city. If somebody were to tell us that we have a spot in the city, Lower Middlesex Street, back when I started on the job, certainly when Mike started on the job, it was more or less a skid row type of environment. Yeah. That stretch of area has been developed into high-end condominiums, a courthouse, wow. and some other things.
Art galleries.
Wow. And that none of that development would be possible without public safety. If there's even, it doesn't necessarily matter if public safety is sound or unsound, it's the perception. Mm-hmm. And we used to have a chancellor over at the time, University of Lowell, and he used to say in the process of choosing new students, he lost more kids from the end of the connector to the beginning of a Tuckettville than anywhere else in the process. But it was a reflection on people's perception of the city. And again, if you're driving in and there's trash strewn about, it's not necessarily a police problem, but it necessarily is. Mm-hmm. We have to bring our partners in government and our partners in industry mm-hmm. into the fold to clean that up. Because if you're driving through, pick a place, pick a neighborhood. If you're driving driving through there and you see trash and so forth, blown in the wind, that's just not a good look. It's not a good perception, and it's not really going to do anything for the city or town in which you're driving through. It's a poor reflection. So again, we get back to the broken windows theory. Yep. We address the small matters, and don't get me wrong. We most certainly address the bigger crimes, the felonies, homicides, and so forth. But again, as discussed earlier, that's a small percentage of what we do. And, police officers use discretion. We're generally not arresting people for, minor crimes of shoplifting and so forth. There's typically more that goes to it. And word travels fast. So if a particular community knows that they can go into CVS and shoplift and get away with it, they're going to do it.
Oh, they will.
If they, if conversely, if they know that they can't, they won't. Mm. So that's the idea. We recognize that. And again, it's part of working in an urban environment. It's part of working as a municipal police officer. Again, just the facts and that type of thing. It's just, it doesn't work. It never worked. Mm-mm. You know, people in government did recognize it in the late 80s. President Clinton recognized it. That's why he poured so much money into the COPS program.
Yeah.
And once that money started to dry up, a lot of the communities, especially the urban communities such as Lowell, recognized the fact that these cities had undergone major transformations as a result of their new public safety model. And it had nothing to do with the fire department or anything else. It had everything to do with the police department, a professional police department, well-dressed police department, well-functioning police department, cruisers that worked, you know, all the stuff that goes with it. And, you know, if you want to be recognized as a professional, you have to play the part. And again, that's part of community policing as well. Mm-hmm. If over the years, they've done numerous studies with defendants in prison that have killed police officers. And the one common theme that they all have was that they knew they could get away with it because they perceived the officer as sloppy and weak. Wow. And again, with that whole community policing philosophy is a frame of mind, and really to get away from it, we're doing the nation a grave disservice.
You know, under the last administration, not Trump's, but the one prior, right in the transition between Obama leaving and Trump coming in, there were these videos of New York cops, and they just happened to be women. I've worked with women since the 70s, and I've worked with some great police officers that I'm not a sexist at all when it comes to this. I've worked with some brave women police officers that perfect.
Ann Perriello, she's wonderful.
Good example. I can name 20, but
yeah.
My point is these women, these cops just happen to be women, and these thugs are dumping buckets of water on, these are New York cops now, dumping buckets of water on their head, and nobody's doing anything. Mm. And not to be some hero, but back in the day, that would have never had, they wouldn't squirt you with a squirt gun. Yeah. I mean, never mind dumping, running up and dumping buckets of water. And I thought to myself, wow, where is this going? Yeah. And then 2 years later, 3 years later, you see these signs, defund the police. Are you freaking kidding me? Defund. Why? Because one rogue cop killed somebody.
Yeah.
I mean, he got what he deserved. He's going to jail. I only wish some of these cop killers got the exact same speedy trials and got the sentence life in prison, three life terms. I mean, there are cop killers that are still waiting to go to court 20 years later. You know, there's a cop killer getting out of jail. You know, it just amazes me when the media turns something into something it's not.
A circus.
And then pushes it every night. Mm. You know what? There's just so many things about policing that really disturb me. But this defund the police?
Yeah.
Are you friggin' kidding me? Yeah. You know what? I don't know what type of society people are going to feel comfortable living in. But look at Stanford. Just numbers don't lie. One thing I learned about math. Math is a very useful, you know, subject when it comes to life. People leaving San Francisco in droves. Thousands of people a day are moving out, moving to Texas. People are leaving New York. Same reason. They cannot feel safe in their own
communities.
But again, you know, you get back to the broken windows theory. You have somebody that pitches a tent in a park. Nobody does anything about it.
Yeah.
Next day, you got two tents. Next day, and before you know it, you know, you have this encampment. And
tent cities. Tent cities are everywhere now.
Right.
I don't know much about California law, but my suspicion is that the parks are not zoned as campgrounds.
Yeah.
So somebody should have made the determination in government. Right. We're not going to allow this, and that's it. They haven't. So you see all these once great cities that are turned into, for all intents and purposes, tent cities.
Yep.
And along with that goes all kinds of collateral issues, crime and so forth. And I mean, that's
health issues.
So, perfect example.
Health issues,
suffocating on the street.
Yeah. Podfather, our friend Brian Casey from St. Paul, He's been a guest on our show. Matter of fact, one of the first guests on this show.
Great guy,
Brian Casey. Hi, Brian. We love you. Stay safe out there in St. Paul.
Wrote a great book. It's right over here on my shelf.
Yep. Good cop. Good cop. Great book. Absolutely.
Good cop.
And he took me out on a ride along one time, and he said, "Check this out." And we went to this part of the city in St. Paul. Tents everywhere, just in the woods everywhere. He said, and he knew somebody. You know, he knew these guys. But you're right; it's just not a healthy, not healthy for the city, not healthy for the human beings, not healthy for anything, because these guys are out there to live. They got to commit crimes, panhandle, whatever it is, you know. All the cities are promoting this. I don't want to say promoting this, but they're letting it happen.
They're turning a blind eye to it.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah. And the broken window syndrome, like you said.
We get some people in the population that, you know, complain we're social workers, we're doing all kinds of things that police officers aren't supposed to do. Well, unfortunately, we're typically the last vestige for these people, especially when we saw that during the pandemic. There was nobody else out there but the police.
Right.
There were no social service agencies. Everything was closed. Everything was remote. So these people on the street had one option: the police. And they're people. We understand that. We understand the fact that human beings. We do the best we can. We try to treat them accordingly. And you know, by and large, I mean they treat us accordingly as well. It's a difficult dynamic. It's not a problem that law enforcement can solve.
Yeah.
It's not a problem that local government can solve. It's an issue left to both state and federal government. And the policies that they've come out with over the past 20 some odd years have led us down this road.
Yeah.
So it's something that needs to be addressed, because the common theme, you know, through the tent cities and so forth is addiction. Whether it's alcohol, drugs, a combination of the two, and mental illness.
Yeah.
And typically you have both prongs that are present in these people's lives.
You know, I got a call one night for a woman right on Pawtucket Street. I got a call from the captain on the desk, and he said, "Hey, there's a woman who just set up a tent across from the gas station. She has a dog. Go over there and tell her she can't stay there. She was told last night." Now, I was off the night before, so I go over, and there's a woman. She got a tent set up, nice tent. I knew right away, just from talking with her, that she had some mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
She had a dog with her, and the dog was very rambunctious and barking and, you know, somewhat protecting her. And I just explained to her, you cannot sleep in this. This isn't a park. Excuse me. This is a Riverway. You cannot sleep here. I'm sorry, you know. She goes, "Well, I have nowhere to go." I said, "Well, we have a shelter. You know, I could take you to the police station. You could call somebody, you know." She goes, "No, I don't have anyone to call." I said, "Well, you're going to have to go to the shelter then." So we got into a little, you know, back and forth. And I said, "Ma'am, I'm not leaving here without you leaving, number one. Number two, if you set up a tent somewhere else along here, I'll be back or someone will be back. You're not allowed to do this." Now, this turned into a three-hour call, but excuse me. We got her the help she needed.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what needs to be done. Mm-hmm. Like Tommy said, if she had stayed, and believe me, there was a part of me that wanted her to be able to stay there, you know, my kind heart, my empathy. I'm like, "Oh, this poor thing, let her stay here." But the captain who was in charge of the shift said, "No way, because we'll have free tents there tomorrow."
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And this was like 20 years ago. So anyway, these woke politicians, these mayors, that run these cities, Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York. Oh my God.
Okay.
I mean, they're trying to please these people at cocktail parties that are patting them on the back saying, "What a great job you're doing." Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, people that own businesses, the mom and pop stores, they're suffering. They're getting robbed every night.
Yeah. But the people that Mike alluded to aren't being affected by this.
I mean, exactly.
We saw that during last year's riots. You know, with some of the people from Hollywood, they were all for the riots and everything else. But once the riots arrived at the town line in Beverly Hills, well, there was a curfew. We're not going to have it.
That's not my town.
We have a 9 o'clock curfew. You can't be here, folks. And that was the end of it.
So true.
Exactly. Well, you know what? The what Podfather was talking about, and what you were talking about too, Tommy, was You know, it's easier to let these guys build the, build this tent city and, you know, let them do that than it is to find a place for them to go to, right, a mental health facility. Why don't we get to the core of the problem? Why don't we get to their mental health illness? Why don't we get to their drug addiction? Why don't we fix that instead of trying to throw them in a tent and just say, okay, you do what you want to do. Why don't we spend money on that? Why don't we help these poor people out so they don't have to live there? They, you know, drug addiction, mental health, that all can be worked out, and you can lead a healthy, productive. Look at me and Mike, me and the Podfather. We live great, productive lives. You know, we're wonderful citizens, and we're not a detriment to society.
Right.
And,
well, you know, as both of you know better than I do, the mental health treatment in the United States was severely lacking prior to the pandemic. Post pandemic, it's terrible. And to find a qualified practitioner for somebody that's in crisis or somebody that has a legitimate mental health need is, I'm not going to say it's impossible, but it's very,
very difficult. Seven weeks out.
Very, very difficult.
I have a woman, I got a call back today. She's been calling me like a house on fire. She got a 13-year-old son. I don't see 13-year-old kids. I just don't. I used to. I don't do it. I see adults, 18 and up, addiction problems, mental health problems. But, you know, there's a part of me that I really feel for her. She won't stop calling me, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, they say the noisy wheel gets the grease, yeah. but I'm at a point where I'm just going to give the, you know, have her bring a son in. I'm going to give an evaluation because she is so desperate mm-hmm. and she has nowhere to turn. And I just think it's horrible. Hey, you know what? One more thing. I don't think I know one police officer, anybody that's in their right mind that watched with Derek Chaffin. Is that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know anybody that thought that was a great idea. Let's nail on this guy's neck for 9 minutes. Nobody thought it was good. I mean, it was horrific.
Yeah.
He got the punishment he deserved.
Yeah.
Nobody, yeah. I didn't see anybody out there protesting, whatever. I only wish, like I said earlier, that people that kill cops would have the speedy trials and have the same results.
Yeah.
And you know what? You're not going to ever see it. It's not even news when a cop gets shot. It's on the news maybe twice in a 12-hour span, and that's the end of it.
You know? Well, and unfortunately, you know, again, as discussed earlier with the narrative that the media holds on to and progresses, when and I mean, I didn't follow it from, you know, all the way, but the points that I did follow, I think it's pretty clear, and I mean, I would certainly defer to you being more qualified, but it was certainly clear to me that Mr. Floyd was in not only physical distress, but mental distress.
Oh, absolutely.
So by putting him in the position that he was put into, that only exasperates the mental health issue that whatever that was, I don't know what it was, but clearly there was something, there was some sort of mental health issue.
Yeah, plus addiction.
And nobody's talking about that. There should be a discussion about that. There needs to be a much broader, thicker discussion about mental health in the United States and how it's affecting the population. Yeah. And that goes from, you know, everybody from the top on down. It's there. People need to start having the discussion about it. And people we need, as a nation, need to start being addressed.
Law enforcement can't be the scapegoat for all society problems.
No.
And it's been a great show. I think, you know, having Tommy on today was really, Ed and I try to find guests.
Yeah.
You know, Ed does a great job. You know, every time we have the
intro. Good job with Tommy. Tommy, great guest. Yeah.
I think we matched him today. Yep.
Yeah. And, thank you, Tommy.
Maybe you come on again.
Oh, absolutely.
In the future. Yep. I would like that. And
Do you miss
being the job in the last 3 weeks now? You've been retired.
I mean, anything you do for, you know, in life for 27 years, you walk away from it. It takes some adjustment, but there comes a point in your career where it's time to make a change, and I reached that point, and you know, I'm grateful for the opportunities that presented themselves over the years. I always tried to do the best job that I could. I tried to work hard and always do the right thing. But again, as police officers, we're human, we're fragile, we make mistakes, and unfortunately, sure, some of those mistakes sometimes get magnified into something that they're really not. But we most people go out there, they get up in the morning or at night, whatever shift they happen to be working, and there's a conscious effort to do the best that they can.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Well, Tommy, thank you so much for everything you do for the, or you did and still do. You know, once a cop, always a cop. I'm a firm believer in that. And thank you for everything you did for, you do for the communities and, great. Well, yes. Thank you so much.
It's appreciated. And what a lot of people don't understand when they do approach somebody in uniform, they think, well, it really doesn't make a difference. And they just come up to them and they say, hey, thanks for what you do. It does make a difference.
Yeah, because 100%.
Because we, you know, there is such a negative portrayal in 2021 about the men and women in uniform. When somebody comes up or drives by when you're out in the streets, say, thank you very much. It does. It goes a long way.
Sure. And unfortunately, those comments are getting few and far between, everything going on. So if you guys are listening, man, and you're a civilian, I know a lot of civilians listen to this, you know, go up to that officer and you know, just to, you know, thank him for because you know what? He or she may not be in your community, but you know what? It's a brother and sisterhood, and it goes throughout the country. When that compliment goes to one, it goes to all. So,
yeah. Well, I'm an old man now. I've been retired 6 years. I drive by cops in the city of Lowell. I don't even know who they are. They don't know me. But if they're at a detail and they're pulling traffic, you know, I always give them a wave. If the window's, you know, if they're within earshot, I always put the window down. I say, hey, officer, thanks a lot. You know, have a good day. I want them to know because I know for a fact when people would thank me, which was very far and few between, you know, it really made my day. So,
and there has to be, you know, for our society to function as a nation of laws, there has to be an enforcement component in it. You can call it police. You can call it whatever. You can assign whatever name you want it to be, but there has to be a component where laws are enforced. Otherwise, we go back to the old West. People, you know, having arranging, you know, posses and vigilantes and things of the like, and with the, you know, with the matter out in Minneapolis, the system worked. It was unfortunate, but he was tried in a court of law. He was adjudicated by a jury of his peers, and it will go on to the appeals process, and that's the way the system works. It's not designed to burn things down and destroy other people's property. We have a system in place, and it's far from perfect. But when you compare it to other systems in the world, it's the best.
No doubt about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Friends of Recovery podcast. I'm sorry.
Answering the call.
Answering the call podcast. A podcast for first responders, sponsored by FirstNet, built by AT&T. Stay safe, everybody.
Stay safe, guys.
Thank you.
That concludes this episode of Answering the Call, the First Responders Podcast. Thanks to Genesis House, FirstNet, built with AT&T, for supporting those on the path to recovery and keeping this valuable resource free for all our friends in recovery. Follow us on Facebook for past shows and updates, and enjoy free access to twice daily support meetings. Brought to you by Genesis House and the Friends in Recovery. If you can't get enough of Mike, the Podfather, Jersey Ed, and Skyler, you can catch them on Friends in Recovery, the Addiction Recovery Podcast. Available on Facebook, Podbean, iTunes, YouTube, iHeartRadio, and GenesisHouse.net.